Greetings, greetings, dear friends, and welcome to this week's edition of the London Beat 88 FM J-Air, the London Beat broadcaster. Warren Wills, produced by JB Jordan Brown over there in Gillingham in Kent. It's a rather special edition of the show. This is our Anzac Day, Anzac Week edition of the show. It's going to take a slightly different format. For a start, we're going to get a bit more chat, I think, because there's so many important and cultural relevant events that are happening around the world. So I'm thrilled to say we have our roving reporter on the spot, on the scene over there in London, Mr. Dick Gross. Good day, Dick. And he'll be giving us some reviews of all manner of things over in London. We will also have special music inserts from the talented composer that he is, excruciatingly talented composer that he is, all-round nice guy, humanist, activist, producer, bass player extraordinaire and composer, Mr. JB Jordan Brown. First two musical items you'll be hearing this week's edition will be, in fact, from JB Jordan Brown. We will be hearing from the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Gosh, we do need some comedy at the moment, do we not? Mr. George Stamkoski himself, all-round talent journalist on the spot here in Melbourne at the Comedy Festival, but also a filmmaker, producer in his own right, working on a rather huge musical endeavour at the moment to do with Alexander of Macedon, Alexander the Great. We will also, is there more? Yes, the indomitable writer extraordinaire, Mr. John Farden, who I believe is off to Kyiv shortly. Goodness me, so much stuff going on here, there and everywhere. And JF will be hard in conversation with us very shortly as well. So much to do, much to get through. So much to comment on. First of all, in a world that seems to be becoming increasingly divisive for so many different reasons, the incredible Australian philosopher himself, writer extraordinaire Ray Gaiter, on May 8th will be doing a talk, and it should be something really to look forward to on the challenges to do with ethics at the moment and morality. That's coming up at the law school here in Melbourne. Great friend of the show, and Ray Gaiter, certainly one of Australia's leading voices, both in terms of humanism, activism, peace, logic, common sense, philosopher extraordinaire. That's coming up on May 8th. As you're probably aware, there is a shocking rise in anti-Semitism and Islamophobia around the world that has been fueled to serve so many interests, which we won't go into. Passover is certainly upon us, which is meant to be, of course, our emancipation at the time of liberation from slavery. I'm not quite sure it feels exactly like that. I've certainly got my own challenges happening this week with a Piano Extreme album that I'm doing on Thursday on Anzac Day as a form of tribute. So many people have laid down their lives for what, you could argue. Particularly, I don't know what to say about the intrusion, social media, the normalisation of such egregious and shocking behaviour as is proliferated and whizzing through the air as a result of social media and disinformation and what have you. But one of the things that's certainly coming up that I'm certainly looking forward to seeing, and that is a six-part series on Stan, which is The Tattooist of Auschwitz, which is about Lali Sokolov. Lali was the father of a friend of mine from school, Mr. Gary Sokolov. And just goes to show you, from the scene of some of the most appalling human behaviour, that is the Auschwitz concentration camp, a love story that developed between Lali and Gita and eventually led to the union between the two of them, a marriage. They came out to Australia, and despite the odds and despite being told biologically that Gita would be unable to conceive and bear children, yes, Gary was the product, the offspring, the love child from a union born out of an impossibly ridiculous situation, hopeless situation, that of the Auschwitz concentration camp. A sad and fond farewell to conductor extraordinaire Mr. Andrew Davis, the conductor who passed away this week. So many great people, again, are leaving us, so many issues to deal with. I suppose on a lighter note, things to look forward to. Yes, I've already mentioned about the Paris Olympics many times before, and we've got the French Open, Rafael Nadal, who should be coming back from injury. For people who are watching the IPL, the India Premier League, and I know I am one of these tragic insomniacs who are up late hours, being somewhat surprised and horrified by some of the goings-on in the US, as if you watch cable TV across the board, and whether that's Al Jazeera, whether that's CNN, whether that's Fox, there's some extraordinary happenings going on. But the IPL reinvented two Australian batsmen, Travis Head is one, and a young Jake Fraser McGurk, who are changing the face of one day cricket. I mean, it's quite extraordinary. A huge congratulations to two golfing sensations as well. Scottie Scheffler, who won the Masters and won yet another event this week, and Nelly Korda winning five successive golfing events. Look out for the Amy Winehouse film that is about to be thrust upon us, Back in Black. Much to say about Amy Winehouse, certainly a tormented and tragic life. People know about doxing. We're not going to go into it on this week's show. Something we will talk about in the future, because there are so many potential threats going on. One of the things I am hoping to pin Mr. J.F. John Farndon, who is somewhat of an expert on these things, I don't know if you've been following the news, but in southern China, in Kazakhstan and Russia near the border, in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, in Iran, in Afghanistan, you may well be aware of the fact, unprecedented flooding is taking place, claiming lives, ruining agricultural, ruining livestock, ruining so much for so many people, and such large swathes. I mean, we are only at coming up to May 2024 already, in terms of things like climate change and what is going on. Records are being broken and so many trials and tribulations, but I'm hoping JF will be able to knock a bit of sense into the whole conversation concerning some of these extraordinary phenomena that indeed are upon us. So I'm not going to sort of linger on any of these things, but suffice to say, we have a fantastic show and you'll be hearing contributions from all manner of people. So the first musical interlude we're going to get right now is from the extraordinary talent himself, the man that, of course, is JB, Mr. Jordan Brown, over there in Gillingham in Kent. So let's start out with our composition from Mr. JB Jordan Brown, and then we're going to kick off the whole shebang from reviews in London, reviews at Melbourne International Comedy Festival, and, of course, some input from the fabulous Mr. John Farndon, 88 FM JR. You are, of course, listening to this week's edition of The London Beat. Thank you. And a huge warm welcome back to all of our listeners for this week's edition of The London Beat. And by golly, Royal Britannia, have I got a treat for you now. Coming live across the airwaves on the magic of WhatsApp, I give you, know what I mean, Cockney Governor, here he is all the way from Australia already speaking like that, know what I mean, Dick Gross, there you are over in London. Welcome to the show, Dick.
Hi, Walker.
Welcome.
How you going?
Over here. Well, spring has sprung. We're 9 hours ahead. You're having spring and we're having fall. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. You're autumnal and I'm all sprung.
You're all sprung. Now, listen, you are our man on the spot, roving reporter. I believe that, tell me if I'm wrong, there's a little mouse running around and there's a big trap and there's a bunch of cheese. You've been to see yet another production, another incarnation of the world's longest running production. What happened?
Okay, so I happen to know someone who gave me some reasonably priced seats and got me in.
Right.
Because this is permanently fully booked. It's the Mousetrap.
Yep.
It's been running for almost 40,000 performances.
75 years, they say. Yep.
That's right. And I saw it.
Not at its opening night, I hope.
No, but pretty close. When I was 13.
Right.
For my bar mitzvah, we came over to England, and I remember going out with my mother. It's the only production that I can remember every single detail. And even some of the stage directions I remember, and of course I remember the result. So it's like theatre preserved in aspic. It's very traditional.
The language? Does the language seem very dated, or does it stand up?
Oh, I reckon it stood up,
yep.
And it's at St Martin's Theatre.
In Covent Garden, yep.
Yep, and packed to the gunnels. I went on a midweek night, and this is not innovative theatre. This is theatre that you know what you're going for. It's nostalgia, it's incredibly English.
It's a whodunit by Miss Agatha Christie.
Yeah, and like, I love Agatha. I love Agathas, and I've always read Agathas. And for anyone who goes to London, it's almost like, you know, you have to go to the Mousetrap. And if you do go, you will not be surprised, because what you get is an orthodox play. It's a whodunit. No one guesses it, and as you leave, it's unique. They stop the crowd and they say, please don't give away the secret. And so I won't. So
tell me something. There's a vicious rumour going here that they're changing the ending so a woman who makes beef Wellington with particular mushrooms is going to be the one who is responsible. Is that true?
Outrageous. As a defender of Ballarat, outrageous.
Dick, we're going to get back to you for some more information. You are listening hot on the scene to our roving reporter, Mr. Dick Gross. And bear in mind, Agatha Christie, she's not one of the best-selling, most-running authors. Number one, William Shakespeare. Number two, Alan Ayckbourn. And then number three, Stephen Berkoff. We're going to get right back to you. We're going to pause for some music. You are, of course, listening to this week's edition of The London Beat. And a huge warm welcome back to all of our listeners for this week's edition, 88 FM London Beat. Warren Wills coming to you this Sunday morning, Anzac Day Spectacular. George Stamkoski, our man at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Let's face it, we do need at this critical stage of the year and our history a damn good laugh. I'm not sure Anzac Day, you could argue, is the exact week for it, but then surely why not? As people keep saying to me, another day above ground and smiling, it's a win-win situation. Let's see what George has to say. This is live from the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, which certainly is upon us at the moment here in Melbourne. last week, our roving eye reporter. George was at large and still laughing it off at this year's triumphant Melbourne International Comedy Festival, which, from the 27th of March to the 21st of April, humoristically killed it across an eclectic assortment of venues in the undisputed cultural capital of Australia, Melbourne. Let's face it, we all need to laugh now and then, even in the darkest of times. Comedy becomes our antidote to tragedy, and laughter, be it joyous, cathartic, or downright dirty, is arguably the only medicine that can heal us. Show number one, woo-woo, woo-woo. Performing the UFO sketch show Woo Woo at Baird's Apothecary, a pharmacy-turned-pub with a theatre in the dungeon. The medicine was poignantly administered by the one-man comic Damien Vosk, who introduced himself by proclaiming that whilst most comedians heal their mental illness, this one positively celebrates it. Show number two. This is going to hurt. With healing in mind, this sick reporter limped over to the historic and Athenaeum Theatre, of course, which is, I believe, owned by the Jason Mariner. The oldest heritage-listed neoclassical proscenium in the city to catch British S. Doctor turned stand-up the BAFTA-winning comedy writer Adam Kay. That rings a bell. Holding his hour-long surgery, this is going to hurt. This best-selling act of the 2023 Edinburgh Fringe makes light of his traumatic experiences as a doctor in Blighty. Catching Kay's first tour of Australia, the split personality reviewer in me had to ask himself why 5 million readers had already bought Adam Kay's Secret Diaries of a Junior Doctor, and over 300,000 punters across Britain pay good money to see a show which presents Jonathan Ross called heartbreaking, and actor Stephen Fry deemed painfully funny. Sounds like this was a show worth seeing, George. Looks like being a pretty damn good review. It turns out that over a third of the packed audience were doctors seeking to see the humorous side of their harrowing profession. They were giggling in the aisles at Kay's musical chronicles, in which, tickling the ivories behind his tour bus keyboard, his song Wheezing on a Sunday Morning addressed the topic of chronic emphysema. Parenthetically, says Warren Wills, not a subject widely known for being a topic of great mirth and humour. After rubbing the audience's sometimes sniffy noses in topics like amputation, depression, or plain halitosis, at one point painfully rhyming anaesthesia with euthanasia, Kay closed his show on a serious note that everyone mulling over how doctors and nurses across the world are three times more likely to commit suicide compared to their patients. Interesting. Feeling decidedly healed and no longer limping across Collins Street, the laughter truly stuck in my throat, but in a worthy way, it has to be said. Show number three, Australia's funniest lawyers. Well, George, I can see there's a theme here of taking honourable professions and laying the laughs upon them. At that point, I needed to see my lawyer, but as she had just left the court and was indisposed, I caught a different kind of show billing itself as Australia's Funniest Lawyers. It all unfolded in the intimate downstairs theatre at the ultra-modern QT Hotel. I know it well. A new hotel opened about 5 years ago in Russell Street, which describes itself as a luxury landscape where rules are meant to be broken. This was definitely my kind of place, despite the fact that around half the audience hailed from the legal profession, who, according to the listed ticket prices, paid $20 more than other festival goers for experience. Really? I wondered whether this kind of funny bone occupational therapy was becoming an increasingly popular genre, which had so far gone under my radar. There were four lawyers on the night, put me straight with their specialist brand of legalese humour. Opening the show and laying out his case, our MC, a.k.a. the criminal lawyer, Ray Zai. The show was about defending the freedom to laugh through the only profession that was more narcissistic than law, stand-up comedy. Comedian Tess Birch then followed, I'm not going into huge detail, self-acclaimed straight white guy Mike Goldstein up the ante by making fun of German literalism, whereby inviting a Berliner to play I Spy with one little eye. Picking up the pieces, a lanky funny man, Daniel Muggleton, dressed in a red tracksuit, bearing a silhouette of his face as a logo, told the Melbourneian mob that even though he lived there, he hated Sydney more than they did. Bringing the house down while closing the show, multitasking joker Dave Rose, who has toured his work across five countries in English and German, provoked more bellicose laughter by describing German as the language of a comedy. Rounding it off with some classically self-deprecating Jewish humour, Rose asked the parting audience to consider whether being 15% Jewish was Jewish enough. I truly hope some performers are laughing all their way to their bank because they deserve everything they get for reminding us to not take life so seriously. Well said, George, at least not always. Indeed, thank you so much. George, well done. That is a first look, in fact, at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, with thanks to roving reporter on the ground here, George Stamkoski. We are going to head off in a completely different direction. Hang about indeed, dear brave listeners, because you are, of course, listening to this week's edition of the London Beat.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather. Since my girl and I ain't together, it's raining all the time. Life is bad, gloom and misery everywhere, stormy weather. Can't get myself together. I'm weary all the time. When she went away, the blues walked in and met me. If she stays away, that rocking chair gon' get me. All I do is pray that Lord above will let me and walk in the sun once more. Can't go on, everything I had is gone. Stormy weather, since my girl and I ain't together, keeps raining all the time. When she went away, the blues walked in and met me. If she stays away, that rocking chair gon' get me. All I do is pray the Lord above will let me and walk in the sun once more. Can't go on, everything I had is gone. Stormy weather, since my girl and I ain't together, keeps raining all the time.
And a huge warm welcome to our special Anzac Day edition of the London Beat. And I'm thrilled to say that live coming from Blighty over there in London, riven with its own prospects of elections and postal office machinations and Rwanda machinations, is the fantastic celebrated author himself, Mr. John Farnes. And welcome to the show, John.
Hello there. Pleased to be there with you.
It's great to hear your dulcet tones from over there in Blighty. And I understand you've got something rather exciting going on the Ukrainian arts front. So please do share with us.
Well, quite a few things, actually. First thing is I'm directing a play over Zoom in Kiev with some Ukrainian actors. And it's quite remarkable to me, and quite a privilege to be able to work with a mix of young and more experienced actors on a play. This is a play by a playwright called Vitaly Habura, and it's it's based on experiences of the early days of the war, but the play is in English called Response Ability. It's basically about stepping up to the plate, why it's important, how difficult it is to do it. Quite an inspiring play, but it's just a very interesting experience directing from 2000 kilometers away.
That you must tell us, are you directing this in English, in Ukrainian, in Russian? How's it working?
Yeah. I'm directing it in English. I mean, unfortunately, most of the actors have reasonable English, but not necessarily for chatting, but I can write to them and then message when they don't understand and we get through to each other. But the play is being done in English because English has become a really important language in drama in Kiev because it's a way of them getting out to the wider world.
Okay, now tell me something. So the play will go on in 3 or 4 weeks' time in Kiev and do a run over there?
No, that's going on next Sunday, this Sunday.
Wow.
Then I've also got, yes, it's a tight schedule. But then the other kind of major event is back in February, it was a Ukrainian
cultural festival that I was involved in Wiesbaden in Germany. And a huge success, massive event. And one of the centerpieces of that was a play called The Trumpeter by Ukrainian playwright Inna Gonchirova. And it was about the last, one of the few musicians in the Azovstal siege in Mariupol, because all the band had been killed, and this guy, one guy, was left alive. And it's not a factional play; it's a fictional play that she's written based on war and whether you can derive music from it. And that's why it's called The Trumpeter. And that's now going on for a run in the Finborough in July, and we're going to attach as many Ukrainian, Anglo-Ukrainian collaborations to that, because it's a short play. We'll have discussions, poetry, music, and short plays after that, which should be quite an exciting event.
Sean, are you going to be Zooming any performances of either the one in Kiev or the one at the Finborough, so audiences who cannot make it across to England, i.e. from Melbourne or Sydney, may be able to watch one of these performances?
Yes, they will certainly. We'll certainly be Zooming the one from Kiev next week. Whether it will be live or after the event, but it will certainly be Zoomed, so it will be available to watch. And we will definitely do the same for some of the events in the Finborough in July, because it's really important that as many people get to see this as possible, actually, because, you know, these themes need to be in the public eye, basically.
Absolutely. And I think people are getting so tired of hearing news broadcasts that isn't it refreshing to actually hear it done in a form of theatre, in a form of a stage play?
Well, absolutely. I think one of the things is that you, as you just said, you get exhausted by news coverage, but actually when you see art made from it, it brings home a completely different direction. And I think it's also important for the Ukrainian community here to know that actually they haven't been forgotten. We're still telling their stories despite all the other tragedies and conflicts going on in the world.
Well, another thing to say, I know this, it's a rather overused word at the moment, and that is the word normalised. But I suspect, again, the suffering that goes on in a lot of these conflicts has been normalised by the way it's presented on the news. And therefore, we tend to get a little bit, as you'd say, fatigued or desensitised to it, which is why, again, if it can resonate emotionally with us, it would be a very powerful thing indeed.
Well, it's kind of quite important, and I think it's one of the things that's quite important about the themes that we're choosing the plays is that they're not just saying, oh God, isn't it terrible, but it's finding a message that means something to people, a message of hope. Both the play that I'm doing next week in Kiev, it ends on a hopeful note, and and it's about stepping up to the plate. It's not just, oh God, it's horrible here. For us, and I think that's something that should resonate with a lot of people. It's a time when actually there are lots of politicians giving us the message that everything is hopeless and you should just batten down the hatches and forget, but I think this is a time when we actually have to step up and take social responsibility and keep optimistic and kind about the world.
Kindness would be a great thing. John, it is a pleasure having you on the show this week. We are hopefully you're going to keep us in touch with both of these plays, how we can see them and on Zoom, etc. We are going to pause to have some music, but hopefully we're going to come right back with you and talk about an entirely different subject. You're listening to John Farndon in conversation with Warren Woods for this week's edition of The London Beat. Thank you. And a huge warm welcome back to all of our listeners for this week's edition of The London Beat. And by golly, Royal Britannia, have I got a treat for you now. Coming live across the airwaves on the magic of What's Up. I give you, Cockney Governor, here he is all the way from Australia, already speaking like that. Dick Gross, there you are, over in London. Welcome to the show, Dick. Welcome.
How you going?
Over here, well, spring has sprung. We're 9 hours ahead. You're having spring and we're having fall. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. You're autumnal and I'm all sprung.
You're all sprung. Now, listen, you are our man on the spot, roving reporter. I believe that, tell me if I'm wrong, there's a little mouse running around and there's a big trap and there's a bunch of cheese. You've been to see yet another production, another incarnation of the world's longest running production. What happened?
Okay, so I happen to know someone who gave me some reasonably priced seats and got me in.
Right.
Because this is permanently fully booked. It's the Mousetrap.
Yep.
It's been running for almost 40,000 performances.
75 years, they say. Yep.
That's right. And I saw it.
Not at its opening night, I hope.
No, but pretty close. When I was 13.
Right.
For my bar mitzvah, we came over to England, and I remember going out with my mother. It's the only production that I can remember every single detail. And even some of the stage directions I remember, and of course I remember the result. So it's like theatre preserved in aspic. It's very traditional.
The language? Does the language seem very dated, or does it stand up?
I reckon it stood up,
yep.
And it's at St. Martin's Theatre.
In Covent Garden, yep.
Yep, and packed to the gunnels. I went on a midweek night, and this is not innovative theatre. This is theatre that you know what you're going for. It's nostalgia. It's incredibly English.
It's a whodunit by Miss Agatha Christie.
Yeah, and like, I love Agatha. I love Agathas, and I've always read Agathas. And for anyone who goes to London, it's almost like, you know, you have to go to the Mousetrap. And if you do go, you will not be surprised, because what you get is an orthodox play. It's a whodunit. No one guesses it. And as you leave, it's unique. They stop the crowd and they say, please don't give away the secret. And so I won't. So
tell me something. There's a vicious rumour going here that they're changing the ending so a woman who makes beef Wellington with particular mushrooms is going to be the one who was responsible. Is that true?
Outrageous. As a defender of Ballarat, outrageous.
Dick, we're going to get back to you for some more information. You are listening hot on the scene to our roving reporter, Mr. Dick Gross. And bear in mind, Agatha Christie, she's not one of the best-selling, most-running authors. Number one, William Shakespeare. Number two, Alan Ayckbourn. And then number three, Stephen Berkoff. We're going to get right back to you. We're going to pause for some music. You are, of course, listening to this week's edition of The London Beat.
Thank you.
I'm delighted to say that writer extraordinaire coming live from London with us, J.F. John Farndon himself. Are you there, John?
I am indeed, yes.
Now, John, I know this is a particular pet subject of yours, which is all to do with the extinction of the world and the apocalypse and the ongoing prophecies and the warnings of the doomsayers have been going on for years and years. Sadly, it looks like a lot of it is turning out to be quite true. Tell us a little bit about your understanding about these most extraordinary flooding events that have happened in the past couple of weeks.
Well, I mean, one of them, for instance, then we're talking about the Russian Ural Mountains in Kazakhstan. That's had unprecedented flooding, and it was quite clear what the cause of that was. It's been the warmest start to the year on record in that part of the world, and a huge amount of snow melted as a result and caused catastrophic flooding. But I think that's this year so far we've had the warmest January on record around the world, the warmest February on record around the world, and in the UK we've had the wettest February for 200 years. Basically, there is climate chaos. It's not just global warming.
Right.
It's causing massive chaos around the world. And there is a, and the predictions are that this year will be the first year when we exceed 1.5 degrees average above the pre-industrial norm, which is one of the red lines that lots of conferences have said we cannot exceed. And this year we're going to exceed it. But there's a good side,
right?
because, well, yes, I know it's kind of, but actually, recent research has suggested that if we do act, we can actually reverse this. We can, or not reverse it, but we can do a great deal to slow it down and mitigate the consequences. But we need to act. We need to take extreme action on fossil fuels. We need to kind of reduce our energy consumption overall. But this is possible, but it just needs, if only it was a just. But governments can do it. If they hit their targets that they promised to do, then we should be in a much better state. But they're not doing so. There is a rank failure on the part of governments across the world to take serious action. In this country, our government, which has strong ties to the fuel industry, fossil fuel industry, is opening new oil wells. So its commitment, and the even its own government advisors saying, we are, you're missing your targets, you're not doing enough. And I would echo that.
Now, John, now obviously these phenomena don't happen in a vacuum. And I saw very recently a conversation with a British potato farmer who was bemoaning that in recent years he had unprecedented droughts where the potatoes had turned to dust, and now he had unprecedented flooding where the entire crop was ruined. Now, clearly the impact economically of these phenomena will be felt by people going out to buy their groceries, I imagine.
Well, absolutely. And you've just hit the nail with something on this. I was talking about the wettest February on record recently in the UK. And one of the problems is that the wheat crop is just not growing. And so we are going to, and that's not true just in the UK, but in other countries. And so we are going to get a, later this year, the harvest is going to be severely reduced. So bread prices will grow up, go up. There will be a severe shortage. So it is going to hit us in the mouth and in the pocket quite soon.
Now, of course, the other thing which is worrying for most people, and a lot of people have problems getting their head around it, but of course, the fact that there is flooding doesn't mean that there is more drinking water around, and it often means that there is more effluents and sewage around.
Well, absolutely. The kind of problem is that water to become available for use has to be retained in the ground. It has to ooze, seep in gently so that it's catchable. But when you get massive rainstorms in one go, it just runs off and takes with it in all kinds of industrial pollution, sewage and whatever. So massive rainstorms are bad for drinking water and bad for pollution and can cause chaos and catastrophe for lots of people.
Now, in terms of also other impacts, apart from obviously economic and people obviously losing their homes and their livelihoods, we had an incident here last year where the ice in Antarctica did not reset, repack the way it should have in come the winter. And as a result, the nesting grounds for a lot of the emperor penguins were lost. And many feared at this rate, the emperor penguin will become extinct very soon. Now, of course, this is going to also have huge knock-on ecological effects to the whole chain, the whole system of species and then food, etc.
Absolutely. The one of the problems is that nature is, we don't have isolated species, isolated animals, isolated plants. It's all part of the big net, and the knock-on effects of even small changes can be quite severe. But I don't want to kind of dwell too long on the, as you said, the doomsaying, because it's kind of, because if we dwell too much on the catastrophes, we end up wanting to just hide away and not talk about it. But there are tremendous initiatives in many parts of the world to preserve wildlife, to look after wildlife, and it's possible. It is possible to do things. We just need, it really does depend on governments, but we need to pressure governments to do more. Because it's governments in connection with global corporations that are doing the most ordinary people do very little damage to the environment. So it's not going to ruin your life to take whatever people say. Because at the moment, for instance, then in London, there's been this big fuss over the extension of the ultra-low emission zone, which the mayor wants to extend because we're to reduce pollution in the boroughs, but some hysteria has been whipped up by protests who think they're going to be deprived of their cars, which is not true. It's basically those kind of measures are going to benefit all of us.
Well, John, it has been, again, a privilege and a pleasure talking to you, and I admire your boundless energy and enthusiasm, and you're quite right. I think if everyone thinks it's doom and gloom, people think, oh, what the hell, and do nothing about it to change their ways. So we do need to be incentivized and encouraged to know that, yes, we can do things to make it a better planet to live on, for sure.
Absolutely, yes. And I'm an optimist, and I think optimism is the kind of warming that we need.
Indeed. John, as always, it has been a great pleasure having your insight. We are going to pause for some music. I am hoping that we're going to be able to speak to you next week about some other matters. But for the time being, a huge thank you to John Farndon there in London for his take on the unprecedented flooding going on in the world at the moment. We're going to pause for some music. You are listening to John Farndon and Warren Wills in Conversation for this week's edition of the London Beat. And indeed, dear listeners, all good things must come to an end, inevitably, as this week's edition of the London Beat is no exception. And a huge call out and thank you to JB, Mr. Jordan Brown, for not only producing the show, but two fine, fine musical compositions, contributions to the show. Thank you for that. JF John Farndon, huge call out for two fantastic interviews, one about Ukrainian theatre, and indeed one about the situation with climate change. Our roving man on the ground, a bit of fiat, know what I mean, Dick Gross over there in London. Of course, George Stamkowski over here at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival. It has been quite a thing, but pause, breathe, lest we forget Anzac Day, the Australian New Zealand Army Corps. So many people of a particular generation not that long ago who fought, first of all, primarily in the Great War, then, of course, in World War II, who laid down their lives and made the ultimate sacrifice so we could enjoy a particular way of life. Let's hope we don't take it for granted. Let us be gracious. Let us be kind. Let us be grateful. We're going to end this week's particular show with a huge thank you to everyone who contributed, and of course to you, the dear listener. We'll be back at the same time next week for another edition of the London Beat.
London Beat. JAIR 88 FM.